Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what's happening in your brain when you stand at the ice cream aisle at the store and you stare at all the different options? It doesn't look like there's a lot going on there, but inside there is a war of brain networks that are raging. So how does your brain make its decision about what it's going to buy? And how is that influenced by price, by your emotions, by your group of friends? How do you decide whether you'd rather have a chocolate bar in the shape of a computer keyboard or a nice candle with an integrated matchstick holder? And what does this have to do with Starbucks or Tiger Woods or Burger King? Welcome to Inner Cosmos with me, David Eagleman. I'm a neuroscientist and an author at Stanford University. And in these episodes, we sail deeply into our three-pound universe to understand why and how our lives look the way they do. Today's episode is the second part of a three-part series. We're looking at how the brain is a machine built of networks that live in conflict. In the last episode, we saw that your brain is a team of rivals. You have different networks with potentially opposing opinions, and they all compete to steer the ship of state. And today we're going to see how these rivaling networks determine how we decide what to buy, like which ice cream brand or which car brand. How much should something cost? How do you get steered or manipulated by emotions? And does it matter if your friends think something is cool or lame? We're going to see how an understanding of the brain exposes how we make our daily decisions. As we found out in the last episode, different networks in your brain care about different things. And brain scientists all over the world have used imaging technologies to see what the brain is up to when we are faced with decisions, like decisions about which fast food restaurant you're going to choose on the block, or which shirt to buy, or which internet service provider you're going to sign up with. So let's start with the field of economics. All of us who studied some economics in college learned how humans make decisions, or that's what we thought we were learning. But what we were actually learning was an idealized version. We learned about Homo economicus, which is a rational decision maker. And that decision maker always works to maximize gain and minimize loss. And he's objective. He's able to delay gratification. His decisions about what to buy are unswayed by his emotions. And by the way, if you put him in the same situation twice, he'll behave consistently. But imagine I offer you two generic quarts of Rocky Road ice cream. And for one, I'm charging you $2.50. For the other one, I'm charging you $3.25. As far as you can tell, it's the same ice cream inside. So if you're an economist, if you're homo economicus, the choice is easy. It's straightforward. But now imagine that I rotate the quarts so you can see the labels. And one says Ben & Jerry's and one says Häagen-Dazs. So which one do you take now? Well, it's not so straightforward for real humans because suddenly there's branding and the emotions that you anticipate from eating these and what your friends think of these brands and all your past experience with these brands. And all this has led in the last 30 years or so to a new field called neuroeconomics. It's also known as behavioral economics. And it comes down to the fact that we have generally misunderstood how humans actually make decisions. So psychologists and neuroscientists have been running experiments for decades now to get a realistic understanding of the way people actually behave rather than the way they're supposed to behave. And what has emerged from this field is that real humans are irrational. We care about immediate gratification. We ignore consequences. Our decisions are massively swayed by our emotions. We behave inconsistently, not making the same decision each time. We're easily confused by calculations about risk. We're always influenced by branding. So this is what we're going to talk about today. How an understanding of the team of rivals in the brain gives a clearer picture of how we behave. As we talked about in the previous episode, you are not an individual. In other words, you're not a single program that's running. Instead, your brain is made of competing pieces and parts, a society of mind. And these are always battling to control your decisions. The outcome of the battle determines what you do in the world. So for example, if I take some warm chocolate chip cookies out of the oven and place them in front of you, part of your brain says, great, that's a good source of energy. Another part of your brain says, don't eat them, you'll get fat. Another says, okay, I'll eat them this time, but I promise I'll go to the gym tonight. And you can argue with yourself and eventually get mad at yourself for your decision. You can curse at yourself, cajole yourself. And as we'll see in the next episode, you can even make contracts with yourself. But who's talking with whom here? It's all you, right? But it's different parts of you. And this is the sense in which humans can be conflicted. Now, there are lots of drives that you have, but today we're just going to concentrate on three of the main networks that have come out of the last couple of decades of brain scanning experiments. And these three networks are among the biggest drivers of your decision-making when you're standing in the store. The first network that we're going to talk about cares about the price of something. It's made of a couple regions that sit on the side of your brain in the northern part here, above where your ears are. The second network cares about the emotional experience, or more specifically, the anticipated emotional experience. This is located on the part of your brain just above your eyeballs. This is called the orbitofrontal cortex because it's just above the orbits of the eye in the frontal lobe. And this network cares about things like, what will these chips taste like compared to these? Will they be delicious or gross? Will this make me happy, regretful? And the third network responds to social context, as in, do my friends think this is cool or lame? And these are regions right along the midline of your brain, between the two hemispheres near the top. So I'm going to tell you this story in three acts, one about each of these networks. So let's start with the first, which is about how much you think something is worth. A great book that summarizes the psychology of this is Predictably Irrational by my colleague Dan Ariely, and I'll use some examples from that. So let's say you're in the market for a pair of Bluetooth headphones, and you find it at a local store, and they're charging $29. So you think, great. So right when you're about to buy it, I ring you up on your phone, and I say, hey, I'm two blocks away, and I just found that headset you've been looking for $19. So it's $10 cheaper. The question is, will you walk over to where I am to buy the $19 headset instead of the completely overpriced $29? Now let's say you're in the market for a new cell phone and you find the one that you want at the store and it's for $567. And right when you're about to purchase it, I call you and I say, hey, I'm two blocks away and I found that phone you're looking for $557, $10 cheaper. The question is, are you going to walk all the way over two blocks to save $10, $567 versus $557? Now, the thing to notice is that these two scenarios are exactly the same. I'm asking, is $10 worth the walk or isn't it? It's the same $10 either way. But in the first case, most people will do it to pay 19 instead of 29. And in the second case, almost nobody's going to make that walk two blocks just to pay 557 instead of 567. And this illustrates an important point, which is that nothing is judged by itself. Everything is judged in context. You are not homo economicus. Okay, now I'm going to make you an offer. You can have one of two things. I'm either going to give you a chocolate bar shaped like a computer keyboard, or a candle with a little drawer built into it that holds matchsticks. So which one are you going to take? This is a difficult decision, right? Because how do you translate these into a common currency so you know which one has more value to you? The reason this is a challenge is because everything has to be converted into a common currency to make a comparison. And this has to happen at the level of neural activity. And that's tough when you have such different items. This is the same if I give you some other comparison, like I'll give you three apples or a case for your sunglasses that's shaped like a hot dog. How do you convert that into a common currency to make a direct comparison? So what the brain is always looking for is context. It can't make a decision about the value of something unless it can do a direct head-to-head comparison. And this ends up being an important clue for people who are trying to sell you something, because none of us know how to price something, so we need to be told. So here's an example. This happened with Williams Sonoma some years ago. They introduced a home bread bakery. It's like a large toaster oven that makes a loaf of bread for you. And they put a price tag on it around $275. And it was a perfectly good product, but sales-wise, it failed completely. No one was buying it. Why? It's because people saw it on the shelf and they thought, what is a home bread bakery anyway? Is this a good one? Do I need it? So Williams Sonoma took on a research firm who advised them to get a hold of a second home bread bakery, a slightly bigger one that was more expensive, and put it on the shelves next to the first one. So they did that. And you know what? The first bread bakery started selling. Why? It's because people didn't have to make a decision in a vacuum now. Now they could think, okay, well, I don't know much about home bread makers, but this one seems to take up less counter space and it's less expensive. So that seems like it's the right choice. So the customers' brains were given something that they could compare, and that allowed them to secure a decision. And this trick of giving context, by the way, is an old trick in real estate. So let's say you're an agent and you're trying to sell someone a medium-sized traditional home, but the prospective buyers are torn between that one and some modern home. And they're stuck because these two homes are as different as the chocolate keyboard and the candlestick. So what do you do as the real estate agent to get them unstuck? what you do is you show them another mid-sized traditional home, one that's a little bit worse. Maybe the kitchen is outdated or it's covered in wood paneling. So this is known as the decoy effect, because you don't expect them to buy this other home you've just shown them. But what you're doing is you're giving their valuation system something it can understand. The brain can now compare the slightly worse traditional home against the slightly better traditional home, the one where the kitchen doesn't need an update. So they see this in context now, and it allows them to lock down a decision. In general, everything in your brain is priced by comparison to other things that are like it. And this is because the brain stores its knowledge by association, what is related to what and how. So you're not going to pay $25 for a bag of chips because you have lots of experience with bags of chips and they're not supposed to cost that much. But interestingly, there is a way that companies can change where an item sits in your network of associations. So for example, some of you may remember a time where you could drive anywhere in the nation and get a cup of coffee for 50 cents. But when Starbucks launched, they didn't want to sell their coffee for 50 cents. So they built Starbucks to feel like a continental European coffee house. And they had the place filled with the smell of roasted beans, and they sold coffee presses and biscotti and croissants. And they were creating a different experience, so different that we wouldn't use the prices of the diners as an anchor anymore for the price of coffee. So yeah, they even changed the sizes they sold. So small, medium, and large became tall, grande, and venti. And this made it so that in your network of associations, you didn't link Starbucks coffee with diner coffee, but instead with something different and fancier. And therefore, your valuation of the cup of coffee doesn't feel off. So I was in Seattle a while ago, and I saw a McDonald's billboard that was taking a shot at Starbucks. The sign said, $4 for a coffee is dumb. And what struck me as funny is that Homo economicus totally gets McDonald's message, supply and demand and so on. But real humans simply don't care. We get something out of our experience with Starbucks, and therefore we're willing to value a blonde vanilla latte differently.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was! And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to catch you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on StoryButton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
So now I've told you how the brain thinks about value, how much is something worth. But as I said at the beginning, this is only partly how the brain makes decisions. There are other competing areas involved. And we turn to the second act now, which is about emotions. Economists used to think that all decision-making in humans was a rational process. You weigh costs and benefits, and that tips your decision. But recently, the importance of emotions has come into the spotlight because emotions are a critical part of the language of the unconscious. It's not all about logic or rationality. We're not just information processing devices. Our lives are richly painted by emotion, and these influence decision-making. So one basic example is that you will make harsher moral judgments when you're in a room that smells bad. This shows the role of emotions, like disgust, in decision-making about things that you might think are higher level concepts. Okay, now I'll give you another example, one that's been making the rounds in philosophy for a little while. In part one of this series, I mentioned the trolley dilemma. Here's a quick reminder. A trolley is barreling down the train tracks out of control. Five workers are making repairs way down the track. And you, a bystander, quickly realize that they're all going to be killed by the trolley. But you also notice there's a lever nearby that you can throw, and that will divert the trolley down a different track where only a single worker will be killed. So what do? If you're like most people, you pull the lever because it's better to have one person killed than five. Now, in the second scenario of the trolley dilemma, the same trolley is barreling down the tracks, the same five workers are in harm's way, but this time, you're a bystander on a footbridge that goes over the tracks, and you notice that there's a large man standing on the footbridge, and you realize that if you were to push him off the bridge, his bulk would be sufficient to stop the train and save the five workers. Do you push him off? Now, most people here just won't do it, even though the math is exactly the same. You're trading one life for five lives. The only difference is the issue of touching the person with your bare hands or not. And as I mentioned last time, when my colleagues did brain scanning, they found that in the first case, the networks that come online are just those involved with doing math problems, essentially. But in the second case, you've got these emotional networks coming online too, these networks in the orbital frontal cortex. And that entirely changes your decision. So the networks involved in emotion are very powerful drivers of decision-making. And this plays a big role in how we select products, how we make economic decisions. So when companies are interested in plugging into these networks, they don't use terms like, we have an integrated approach, or we give a comprehensive solution. Those things don't talk to these orbital frontal networks at all. Instead, companies say things like, don't hate me because I'm beautiful, or are you man enough to eat this burger? And the idea is to plug right into the emotional networks to steer your decision making. And it doesn't have to be big and explicit, but also includes everything you've ever seen in any ad. Beautiful people loving the product being advertised. They smile beautifully when they touch or look at the product. If it's cereal, it's a family that's so happy and attractive and they don't have any problems. If it's for an adult audience, the stars of the commercial are smiling at each other and the camera lingers for just a moment longer to make it clear that this is all a prelude to something that's inevitably going to happen between them. In other words, the appeal isn't to these networks that are concerned with valuation, but instead the networks that drive primitive emotions. These have tremendous power in the neural parliament that drives your decisions. So now I've mentioned the brain networks involved in valuation and those involved in emotion. And there's one more, which brings us to Act 3. Traditionally, we study the brain by looking at different regions and mapping what they're involved in. Like, this is the region for vision, and over here is where hearing takes place, and this area is involved in touch, and so on. But an enormous amount of the circuitry of the brain has to do with other people, understanding other people. We have an enormous amount of circuitry devoted towards issues of trust or integrity or the reputation of other people in our tribe, or in modern life, it's others we meet all over the world, as well as celebrities we've never even met. Bizarrely, so much of our circuitry is devoted to social concerns. I can even ask you, hey, does that person in your 1,000 contacts that you know this other person? And you'll pretty much know immediately whether they know each other and how. Think about that. It's like a 1,000 by 1,000 matrix of data that's being stored there that you can just call up in an instant. And these sorts of considerations about how much our brains care about other people has led to a new subfield called social neuroscience. Now, something quite amazing and surprising that I studied in my lab with brain imaging is that to the brain, companies are just like people. We evolved in small groups and developed this very rich social circuitry to understand each other and to understand issues of trust and integrity and reputation of every person in the group. But companies came along just in the last second of our evolutionary history. And obviously, Mother Nature hasn't had time to rewrite the brain to understand companies. So we use exactly the same circuitry as we do when we think about other people. So we study this in my lab by having people read a vignette about a person that does something either good or bad or suspicious, and we measure how different brain regions respond to a person behaving this way. And then we show these same vignettes to other people, but we swapped out the name of the person with the name of a company. And the brain regions that respond are exactly the same. Evolutionarily, companies are something new, and we haven't evolved new circuitry to understand them. So we understand a company exactly the same way, with the same circuitry, that we use to understand other people. Is that company trustworthy? Does the company have integrity? What is that company's social reputation? And you see this on Facebook, where people are friends with people and they're friends with companies. And by the way, in the legal system, there's a legal fiction in which we treat corporations like individuals. So the corporation can be guilty of a crime, can be liable of a crime, and so on. In fact, the word corporation means body. Now, it might seem hard to believe that companies and social reputation are tied so closely, but let's take a typical example. Look at what happened when one major company tied their reputation to a clean-cut, admirable young man, and they got all the benefits from that. I'm talking about Nike, who tied themselves to Tiger Woods. He was in their advertising, and his superstar power directly lifted their economics because he was awesome. And so people felt like, cool, Nike is awesome in the same way. But then one day in 2009, the news hit Twitter that he was cheating on his wife. Now, you can go back and look at a chart of Nike stock that day. The news of his infidelity hit Twitter at 11:40 a.m. And you can see the immediate effect on the Nike stock price, which continued to drop precipitously for the rest of the day and for the next 6 months. Even though Tiger Woods has nothing to do with the manufacturing or distribution or the quality of the shoes, his infidelity soiled the company's reputation in the social brain. If he didn't have integrity at that moment, then something becomes wrong with the shoes. Now, what I want to point out is this is not just an economic phenomenon, it's a social phenomenon. And fundamentally, it's a neuroscientific phenomenon. These social circuits evolved when we operated in small tribes. They weren't really built to operate at the level of multinational companies. And as a result, companies get to ride on this circuitry for free. But it also means that companies need to be aware that they're operating with these basic friend or foe circuits. It means that companies need to treat their customers like tribe members. And I'm not saying this just as a friendly business philosophy. I'm saying this because the same circuitry is being used. And because of social media, these sorts of social exchanges have taken an unexpected evolutionary leap forward because they are unerasable now. So here's an example. Some years ago, there was a young man traveling on United Airlines, and he had to check his guitar through the baggage claim. So he's sitting on the plane when they're on the runway, and he's watching the guys load the luggage in, and he sees the luggage handlers toss his guitar as they're loading it. And when this guy gets to the destination, he discovers his guitar is broken. So he complains to United Airlines, but they tell him they can't take responsibility for it, and he has to pay for his own guitar. So he gets mad, and he writes a guitar song and he puts it on YouTube, and it's called United Breaks Guitars. And this goes viral. And The Economist magazine wrote an article in which they estimated that this guy cost United Airlines $130 million. Why? Because social reputation matters. And the internet has made reputational issues fast and instant and unerasable. And all this ties into how companies use social media. So when Facebook first got introduced as a concept many years ago, all companies immediately started thinking about this as, okay, how do we start a Facebook account and post on our feeds and get people to buy our product? But this turned out to be a fail because people weren't going to Facebook with the intention of being sold to. So companies realized pretty quickly, it's not about selling directly, but the reason to have a Facebook account was about branding. In other words, how could they develop a social reputation? How could they talk to these networks in the brain to make you feel like they are your friend? So I just looked this up. As of this morning, Burger King has over 8.6 million people following them. That's more than Stephen Colbert. Now, what sober adult clicks to be friends with a fast food restaurant? The key is that they're not selling on their feed. They're strengthening their connection with you like you're a friend. They say chatty things like, you like us, we love you. They're just like a living, breathing person. And this is what companies do to plug in to these networks.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made Raisin's dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on Storybutton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
So I was in Texas recently, and I noticed a billboard that said the most, quote, liked energy company in Texas. You can choose your own energy provider there. So I wondered, what is there to like about an energy company? In other words, why on social media would you click to like them? So I went and looked them up on Facebook. They had 300,000 friends. So a month ago, I was on an airplane and sitting next to a guy, and we started chatting about this. And he says, oh yeah, I'm a member of that company. So first I was struck that he didn't say customer, he said member. So I thought, I need to understand what exactly this company is doing that makes them so liked. So I went to their webpage, and on their site, they're hitting all three of these neural networks that I talked about. So in one part of their homepage, they're plugging right into the valuation networks. They say they're the least expensive company and they'll save you tons of money. And they have pictures of dollar bills snowing down. Now, next to that, they have a picture that shows when you buy your energy from them, they'll give you points that can be turned into rewards. And they have pictures of airline tickets and coffee and cash. And this section plugs right into the orbital frontal networks that care about reward. And right below that, they have a section on the page that plugs into social context. It says, when you earn, your friends earn. And there's an attractive young woman holding a sign that tells us her name is Stacy. And behind us are a group of her attractive friends. And they're holding a sign that says, Friends of Stacy. And what you can read on their faces is that they're all so taken with Stacy because she's earning money for them. She's earning and everyone likes her. And they're happy and thriving and good looking and have a tight relationship. And they're cheering for Stacy with no hesitation. They really like her. Possibly some of them are in love with her. And this plugs right into the social networks that tell you that your friends think this is cool. So this company is doing a textbook job of hitting all the axes to align these networks in your brain. So you don't have to feel like, yeah, they're inexpensive, but they're boring. Or they're socially cool, but they're too expensive or whatever. They're firing on all cylinders. And that's how they're able to attract so many likes. Now, I'll mention something else. When I went to their page, it told me that two of my friends like this energy company. Now, who spends their time liking an energy company? But I want to point out that this has been one of the most important tools of social media. Not just the like button, but the notification that your friends like this. Because brains are so social, we really care about that situation. We buy what our friends buy. We care about what our friends care about. We are social animals. And things have enormous sway if our friends like it. That little message plugs right into these networks telling us that it's cool. And this is why social marketing is so effective. Think about it this way. Would you pay $129 for some weird new earbuds that were green and hung halfway down your face? Maybe, but you'd be more likely to do it if your friends were all doing it. If when you saw the ad for those, you saw that Bob and Tonica and Wei Ji were all doing it. Because we're social animals and we care what our friends do. If they like it, we like it. This is the basis of all trends, which are almost always things that we look back on after a decade and we can't believe what we did or what we wore or what we bought. But at the time we did it, everyone was doing it. And that was the basis of the coolness. That was what plugged into these networks in the midline of your brain here. Economists talk about faith in the market. The reason this all has so much influence on our behavior is because of faith in the social market. We can't possibly have time to research everything. But we assume, almost always erroneously, that if our friend has bought that thing, it must be because he or she has invested the time researching it and weighing all the options and selecting the killer perfect brand or model. So that gives us faith and we can save time because our friend, who we like because they're smart or simply good looking or simply because they like us back, if that person has chosen this brand, then it must be awesome or they wouldn't have done it. And that's why the social brain is so critical to our decisions. So, zooming out, we make our purchasing decisions based on these three networks: price point, the emotional feeling, and social context. And there are other networks involved as well, but these are some of the biggies. And the key is that these are all running as a team of rivals. These systems are always battling it out under the surface, and it's all unconscious, which means you don't have access to the details. So when you choose to get a burger at one fast food place over another, you don't ask, am I buying this because of the price point, because of the emotional salience of the salt and fat and the colors used in the restaurant, or because their ads feature beautiful young people in love and that reminds me of my friends and my social life or what I wish it were. When you're at the store choosing between ice cream brands, when you're scanning the Ben and Jerry's and Blue Bell and Häagen-Dazs, you don't have access to the details of the battles going on under the hood. You simply wait for a feeling to get served up to your consciousness, and then you reach out and grab one container off the shelf and not the others. So keep this in mind the next time you're choosing between brands. Why are you choosing this one? What are the elements that are influencing your decision? Might you make a different choice if you become aware of the parts that are influencing you? You can't change the wiring of your brain, but you can become more aware of what steers you. Okay, so the previous episode was called How is the Brain Like a Team of Rivals? And in this episode, we dove into specific examples of different drives that pull our behavior in different directions. So I hope you'll join me for the next episode, part three, where we will discuss how we can take this knowledge and use it to navigate our own behavior. Because you have systems in your brain that deal not only with what is right in front of you, but also that do long-term thinking. So how do you get yourself to do the right thing in the moment? How do you balance networks that care about the now with networks that care about who you are and who you want to be? How do you forego temptation that's not aligned with your long-term goals? How is your decision about eating that cookie related to the hero of the Trojan War? I'll see you there in the next episode for the culmination of everything that we've been talking about so far. That's all for this week. To find out more and to share your thoughts, head over to eagleman.com/podcasts. And you can also watch full episodes of Inner Cosmos on YouTube. Subscribe to my channel so you can follow along each week for new updates. I'd love to hear your questions, so please send those to podcast@eagleman.com, and I will do a special episode where I answer questions. Until next time, I'm David Eagleman, and this is Inner Cosmos.
Coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.